Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live today. Tech companies letting everyone vote. Drake gets to a billion sales, and Luke Cage is coming to get you. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell, as always, joined by my man Akili Shine.
Yes, sir, man. You finally knocked it down, man. Yeah, very clean.
Only took me 200 episodes.
Exactly.
But I got it.
Hey, you got it, man.
That's coming into the old Lyricist Lounge.
Yes, sir. Most deaf.
The mighty most deaf with, I think, my man Taz from Alcoholics.
Yeah.
Right. And what was that? Q-Tip?
I believe it is. Yeah. I believe that's correct.
That's a
classic album.
That's a good album.
Classic compilation album.
Yeah,
good time.
It's got a good Eminem track on there, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. That's when Eminem was still, like, you know, kind of obscure.
Yeah, baby Eminem. Yeah,
exactly.
Still coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Where he can, like, be like the 10th guy on a compilation album.
Seriously.
Well, anyway, we were here, Geek Nerd teching it up. We had lots to talk about. We had a big Monday, which was election, which was the debate, which we should talk about and talk about how that affects some things.
Debate Monday.
We still are in the middle of fall TV. We've got a lot of electronic things and tech happening and tech launches and everything else. Let's talk about. But what's on your mind? Anything particular on your mind? Top of the show?
I'm kind of interested in. I think we were talking offline earlier today about the new Denzel joint. Oh my gosh, Fences! Did you see that trailer?
I did.
Holy smokes, man!
It's too much. The Fences trailer. If you guys haven't seen it, it's on point. Based on the play by my man. But directed by Denzel Washington, starring Viola Davis and Denzel, and it's a teaser trailer. Doesn't really give much away, but it's very strategically has a very Denzel-esque Denzel monologue, followed by a very Viola-esque Viola mini response monologue.
The stinger.
Yeah,
it was like, ooh,
and it's like,
okay, the acting's gonna be exemplary in this movie. Like,
yeah,
they're coming for the statue.
I was thinking about this on the way in, and I was like, you know. I was like, wow, Viola is the Black Meryl Streep, and I actually thought, wait, it'd be funnier to call Meryl Streep the Black Viola Davis. That's no disrespect to Meryl Streep, but, like, you know.
And then another joint, you know, Jay-Z and Will Smith, they're about to produce the new Emmett Till movie.
Yeah,
that
interesting.
Is exciting.
That is exciting. I mean, like, I just saw a Birth of a Nation, which was the much talked about Nat Turner story, which, you know, very much, I think, needed to be told.
It'd be interesting
to see how audiences receive that. All audiences.
Hey, I think the Emmett Till story is definitely close to home, though, in the sense that, you know, us as black men, black boys in this country, what we had to endure and still endure right now in these times, like, mm-hmm. that story is going to be very, very emotional, you know, mm-hmm. very close to home. So,
yeah. It makes me wonder about, like, I was talking to this, you know, with Steve, our partner Steve, about this, and also some other folks about, you know, the stuff that came out about Nate Parker, which we won't get into, you know, about, you know, the stuff that came out with him about his case from years ago. The fact that was leaked, when it was leaked, is either, you know, at best case scenario, a rival studio. You know, the timing of it was just very suspicious, and it was either a rival studio who is salty because they didn't get the $17 million bid on that movie, or something else, or someone else, something political. I didn't think it was anything political until I saw the film.
Of course it is.
I didn't think it was anything political until I saw the film, but I'm like, oh, yeah, a movie about a slave uprising, about black folks who've had it and not going to take anymore and start killing white folks, is not exactly the movie that some people want to have out right now.
I mean, anything to discredit, you know, a different narrative that is not in congruence of, you know, how we're programmed to think. Like, anything that's going to educate and give some historical context to why the times are the way they are, or as to why the race relations are the way they are, that's going to be subverted. And so, yeah, use anything, draw things from his history, his past, or try to find some flaws. I think that was definitely strategic. Like, that wasn't just randomized. Someone pressed the button on that. Let's go after this.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's a shame. Anyway, I digress. But let's get back into this election. There's lots to talk about on that before we get into these stories. Did you watch the debates?
I did.
And and then did it change your mind in voting for Trump?
Not at all, man. I'm Trump all the way, man. Come on, dog. Come on. You're out of this world.
No, but what did you think? I mean, obviously.
I mean, I had so many thoughts, man. Like, it's almost I don't want to give power to it, but two politicians, two wealthy people, two people that have influence that can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. Trump on one end, I felt was very disrespectful and just, man, just uninformed and just loud and just disruptive. And I mean, I love Hillary's disposition and trying to combat that. I was just talking offline about how they address race relations. It was completely circumvented. Like, they didn't even speak to what race relations are, is, or what they should be, or what the problems are. It was completely glazed over. And I think, you know, I think it's just entertainment for the sheep, man. I think a lot of people are programming into this hyper celebrity culture and just not really getting the information that we need to be able to make informed decisions that will, of course, affect generations, affect posterity, our children. And so I don't know, man. I have a lot of takes that are specific, but those are my general takes. What about you?
My general takes are very similar. I have the obvious takes of, you know, what, you know, all the things that Hillary had to do to just, you know, get through the debate and not be either more hated or a gaffe. She couldn't cough, she couldn't sneeze, she couldn't smirk, she couldn't laugh, she couldn't, you know, make a look, she couldn't do her, she couldn't do anything. And all Trump had to do was look presidential for 90 minutes, basically, or just sit up there and look like not a moron for and not get upset for 90 minutes, which he could not do.
Yeah. He couldn't do for 10 minutes.
Yeah, so, but the two interesting takes for me were more along the lines of, like, to your point about black folks, it's this thing that Hillary does. And I'm pro-Hillary, but there's this thing that Hillary does. She made this mistake in 08 with Barack, and I think she's kind of making it again, is she kind of has this disposition like the black vote is in the bag. Almost like when it comes to talking about those issues, she almost gave it look like, well, we know Trump ain't there. She almost kind of gave it, it's almost like, black people, you know me. I don't have to speak on this. Well, you kind of do, you know? Like, it's not in the bag. You kind of really do have to articulate your views and your thoughts on how you feel about certain things on a national stage. You can't kind of give the wink of like, I already got you guys. So that's the one thing. Another thing, you know, this is such an election. It just really struck me how an election of baby boomers this still is, and how targeted, you know, they are still. I mean, we have these two people, you know, in their late 60s and 70s running for president. You know, how targeted they are still to this older baby boomer, you know, generation talking about things. I mean, they want to target, and they knew they need to target millennials, but like all their conversations, even like the sort of the anecdotal stories, which I think are wonderful about, you know, Hillary's, you know, working class father and you know, the jobs and the mills and the this and the that. And like, we are, you know, I don't know that millennials identify with that sort of like blue collar grassroots. There's no talk
I think they do, because I think that take is from someone that lives in a city on a coast. What about all the people in middle America that is their reality? And they're still in that age demographic, but they might work in a factory. They might work on a farm. They might have more of a blue-collar, laborious type of job. Maybe they're not in, you know, an agency or business environment.
Well, that's fine. But I think the idea of describing the sort of the fabric of America and the future of America being based in sort of in terms that are more like Norman Rockwell-esque as opposed to something more forward-thinking. Like, I don't know if this were, you know, Cory Booker or Gavin Newsom, that they'd be talking about the old mills and the blah, blah, blah. I think that just sort of speaks to a very specific voter, people who vote, which are, you know, the baby boomers and up. So yeah. That's something that struck me. And I hear what you're saying. I'm definitely not dismissing the flyover states. I just thought that was interesting that they weren't speaking to, like, me, the millennials. Us millennials.
Good luck with that.
Need to be spoken to. But let's get on with this. So, speaking of which, you know, there's a story in Washington Post about tons of tech companies are actually giving employees a day off. Let employees skip, work on election data. This is something that's pervasive, that started among certain tech companies and sort of grew to a thing all throughout the Valley, Silicon Valley, and then all these and then these tech companies that are now multinationals and in other parts of the country, is spreading as well. And I think that this is interesting, one, but it's the tech companies that are sort of these maybe forward thinking companies that allow for this. But there's talk that, you know, the election day should be a national holiday anyway.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of talk about that. I really agree that this should be a national holiday and not, you know, a work day. Like, oh, you after work, go before work. If you can't get out of work, sorry, you can't vote. But I like this. What do you think of this?
I think in concept it's great. When you start to look at it and unpack it, it's kind of problematic because the whole point of getting people out to vote are not the people that are necessarily middle class that have some upward income that are, you know, doing decent. Like, what about the people that are actually, you know, below middle class or impoverished, or they're having a difficulty with their economics, and they don't have the ability or the flexibility, rather, the luxury to be able to take off. And I think a big point was that most national holidays people work anyway, especially if you work on like at McDonald's or you work at a fast food or anything of that nature. Service industry, you're still working. So it's not helping those that actually might be disenfranchised or voiceless. I think, yeah, for the guy that's comfortable and that has that salarized position that has the benefits and can be afforded that luxury, like, that's perfect. But for the person that has kids at home, that has to provide for their family and can't afford to take off work, like, that's not going to happen. So, but I get it in concept that you want to promote the value of voting and exercising your right, and that's what you know gives you the power of a citizen of this country to be able to speak your voice through that venue. Like, I like that it's being entertained in that sense, that we should all use our civic responsibility and have the luxury to be able to do, or more luxury to be able to do that. And so maybe that's what it is. It gives us a little bit more luxury to be able to have the time and space to be able to do that.
Fair enough. I agree. I also think it's interesting that, like, you know, that this is sort of led by tech companies. I think that's interesting.
I mean, because tech companies, they're the leaders and innovators.
Yeah, leaders and innovators and progressive. Not according to Hillary, though. The mills of the... No, that's fine. Next, Will and Grace. I mean, I'm
your favorite show, right?
I mean...
Come on, bro. You used to be in your robe just watching that show religiously.
I'm not mad at Will and Grace.
Eating ice cream.
I'm not mad at Will and Grace at all. I'm not mad at Will and Grace, but I can't say I was a Will and Grace watcher. I can't say that was my show. But you know, I watched it occasionally. I just, you know, I would have watched the Jack and Karen show more than I would watch the Will and Grace show. But now,
I will say this: I love the concept of what they did.
Which is what we said with what they did. They came back and did a mini episode, sort of reuniting the cast to sort of get people to vote.
Yeah, I think that would be dope if some more contemporary shows did that. Like, if we saw that on Empire or something,
right?
That would be fresh, you know. Or we saw that like on Atlanta or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's really. And I wonder why you don't have that. You talk about tech companies getting involved. I mean, Hollywood, you know, whether you're liberal or not. I mean, voting is not a partisan. I mean, like, you know, registering to vote is not a partisan thing. So everybody should be out there talking about, like, you know, registering to vote.
And especially now with where we are with technology, where we are with this, you know, how content is delivered, like OTT and digital content, like, there's more opportunity for us to have that type of content.
Yeah.
I don't know why more networks and more television properties are taking advantage of that. I think that would draw a lot of traffic to the property, you know what I'm saying?
Well, we talked about last time, I think we're going to talk about it again. You know, YouTube and Google, they've got their stars doing that as well. And there's ways, you know, in the same theme, you know, Hillary was on Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis's sort of show, in air quotes, if you will. You see that, by the way?
I've seen it before, but I haven't seen the Hillary episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hillary episode is funny. Yeah. It's really funny. I mean, Zach does a lot of like poking direct fun at, it's almost like he takes the, does a really good job of taking the right wing positions and then saying them out loud to Hillary to her face.
Right.
And there's something about him saying that out loud, it makes it sound all the more ridiculous.
Of course.
And when he's like, oh, that's right, you're here to take away all of our guns. And she's like, you know, He's like, you can call me later. Just be sure to email me. He's like got some zingers in there.
I don't
spoil it all. Obviously, you should go watch it. But it was the most, like, broke all the records for Funny and Die. The craziest, most record-breaking thing on Funny and Die.
It broke the record for the
fastest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because Obama's like at 19 million or something.
Yeah, and Obama's was, and I think this was, it's hard to say, it's weird because I was thinking about this. You know, Lola, who works with us, was saying like how she thought Hillary's was funnier than Obama's. But it's also in hindsight, you know, got to recognize that when Obama came on and did it, it was so, yeah, the
innovative.
First time someone, like
a president
would do that. And the fact that he was just there,
exactly,
you know, and using his
using
style
that
of
medium,
humor.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then, but Obama was trying to trade insults with him, which was kind of like, which is still funny, but Hillary wasn't really trading insults with him. Hillary was just kind of like looking at him like he was crazy, which is funny. There's, I mean, and I think of a lot of the strength of that is that it's just letting Zach say a bunch of wild, crazy shit and have Hillary just be there to hear it and laugh at it. So
like
she didn't have to say much.
I think it's the forum, it's the medium, because typically you'll see your politician or your candidate in a more serious environment. And I think, you know, placing them in an environment that is a little bit lighter and that you're going to expect more improvisation or expect more just like levity. Like, I think it gives more. It gives more of an impact to who that person is because their hair is down a bit, you know.
Yeah,
that's not they're more vulnerable in the sense that they're being more inclusive. I guess is what I'm saying. So.
Well, then the Fair article talks about just the legacy of, you know, that step of candidates feeling like they have to be cool, starting with, you know, Hillary's husband, you know, famously on Arsenio playing the sax,
exactly.
You know, which you know, again, you know, in hindsight. On. You look at it now, it looks ridiculous. Like, even to, like, you look at that clip today, it does not look anything remotely cool.
No.
Bill's got this. First of all, the saxophone is not cool.
No.
Second of all,
it was cool in the 90s.
Like, every song in the 80s had a sax solo. from 1979 to like 1992 had a sax solo. So I guess it was cool.
Come on,
but
man. Bring that music in schools, man.
I'm not mad at the sax. But, like, watch it now. Watch it, like, Clinton lean back with the glasses on.
It's retired.
And Arsenio, like, pointing.
Man, I don't know. If Obama hopped up and put a sax in his mouth, you'd be like, yo, that's cool.
Obama does slow jam in the news, which is already, like, arguably cooler, like, to me. Like, I mean, I think slow
but
jam
if he played
in the
an
news,
instrument, you'd be like, yo.
Yeah, I would like to see Obama play the flute.
Hey,
no,
man.
But yeah. So anyway, back to the point of, like, you know, this is sort of a new wave of the attempt of mostly liberal and democratic presidents trying to be cool. I mean, Bill Clinton did it. Kind of what probably won him the presidency. Obama's been doing it. Like, Obama's been on every podcast, every YouTube show.
Yeah.
He's been on Comedians with Cars with Coffee. He's been on Marc Maron. Like, he's just making the rounds.
Absolutely.
So it'll be interesting to see what he does on the way out. He's going to be doing a lot of stuff. Bill Maher's still trying to get him on the Bill Maher show. I wonder if that's going
to
happen.
You got to speak to where the people are. And so we talk about all the time on the show that, you know, terrestrial television, radios, obviously we're shifting from that into more of a digital landscape. And we talk about younger folks and millennial generation, like, they're on their tablets and phones. And so you got to be where the people are and be represented in that fashion. So I love the fact that, again, like, politicians or specific politicians like Hillary is utilizing those venues and just being more personable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. All right. So and back to that, what we were talking about earlier, the internet, like, you know, these YouTube stars are really, you know, making that push to get you to vote. Google is doing a huge, huge, you know, voting push, you know, with their Google Doodles. You know, talking about voter registration. That was just 2 days ago. They did a whole, you know, register to vote on the day of the day of the debate, which is really amazing because, you know, while people are watching the debate, we watch it on multiple screens. People are on Twitter, people are on Google, Googling, fact checking everything they want to do. But when you Google and you fact check and you see register to vote, like, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I mean, how many millions of Google searches happened during the debates? How many millions of Google searches happened on the 26th?
Right.
And so that was a very, very smart thing for Google to do.
I mean, you got to think, like, the first time that I had the opportunity to vote, which was for who was the first president I was able to vote for?
Reagan.
Yeah, okay, maybe for you. Well, anyway, I mean, you would think that, you know, a lot of this, a lot of the promotional materials that were put in front of me came through in an advert, either in a magazine or something that came in the mail. Like, but now you have it everywhere, you know, and you have all your favorite destinations and platforms that are communicating this. So I think like it becomes hypersensitive now. Like, you can't escape the fact that, hey, you should be forward thinking and you should exercise your right to vote. And I love the fact that you hop on Google, you hop on YouTube, you hop on Tumblr, you hop on Snapchat, and you're seeing this information. It's just a good reminder and getting. And I think it will have an effect. When we look at, you know, election day and who shows up, I think the numbers of younger folks will be much higher than in previous elections. You know?
Yeah, I agree, and I was very upset that I just missed the voting by I missed it by 4 months when my first Nixon? Voting. Yes, I really wanted to cast my vote for Kennedy. But I couldn't back in 62, whatever it was. No, but I missed it by 5 months. I had to wait till the next election cycle, in which I was able to cast the vote, and my president won, who I voted for.
It is.
Bill Clinton. But anyway, so that, you know, that's cool. All right, moving on. Mary J. Blige, this is a big one. So she is going to have Hillary on her Apple Music show.
411.
First of all, have you seen that show? Do you watch it?
I do not. Okay. I do not. I have not seen it, but I have seen bits and pieces of the Hillary.
I mean, it's cool. A little like sister girlish, like little like feels like.
I mean, it's appropriate.
I know it is, but I'm saying like the point is, I know you and I will be watching the.
It's not for us.
Exactly, watching the Mary J. Blige Kerry Washington interview, you know, all day long. But Hillary is super appropriate for Hillary, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The headline of The Verge say it's going to be awkward, potentially awkward Apple Music show. How do you think that's going to go off with Hillary?
She's singing questions to her, like literally singing questions.
I haven't seen any clips from it.
And she's responding like a normal interview, but Mary J. Blige is like, okay, I don't even want to do it, but she's singing the question.
Are you serious? You're not joking
no,
around
I'm
right
serious.
Now?
Not through the whole interview. There are segments where she's actually...
Hillary.
I think that's a bit ridiculous, but and that's why they're saying it's awkward. It's like, okay, and then you know Hillary, her tone is like very serious, and she's addressing the questions like she would in any other interview.
Right,
it's just different.
But you remind me. I can't let her try to do it. It's ridiculous.
Let's get it.
yeah, that's right. Anyway. I don't know. I gotta check it out, but I do see Mary J's got her glasses on. She's got her like looking very, you know. Studious,
hey,
so
I'm not mad at Mary. I'll be interested to hear.
She got
her little
blazer on.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that Mary is sophisticated enough to ask Hillary some real hard hitting questions. I hope they're just not like plastic, like, you know, whatever questions. I hope that she's, you know, addressing some things that are happening in the African American community and putting it on. Put it, you know, bringing Hillary to task to answer it. You know, I really hope that happens in the interview. So we'll see.
Right. YouTube hires Lior Cohen.
That's separate news.
That's an interesting story.
That's your boy too.
Yeah,
that's not my boy.
I mean, Lior is very. I got no comment on Lior. Also, back to Google. Google adds Spanish language voting guides to the search, which is great too. I mean, I think that, like, again, this is part of the outreach of Google. Trying to make sure that everyone, including Spanish language,
no one's marginalized.
Yeah, that, like, you know, it's okay if you speak. If you're a citizen, and you speak primarily Spanish or mostly Spanish, we're reaching out to you too.
Yeah.
The question is, it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, it looks like there's a big opportunity for Hillary in specifically in Florida among Latinos in Florida. There's a huge gap. I mean, the enthusiasm gap is very low.
Yeah,
which is kind of good news because that means that there's room for her to grow and get votes, as opposed to like if it was maxed out the same Obama coalition and she's still losing, then that'd be a problem.
Of course.
So, but you know, Google's trying to help out, but she needs to really speak to those Latino folks.
I mean, I think it's really important for her to do that, and more important for Google and other. Tech companies and to have the social responsibility to educate and inform people, and I love the fact that they're doing it with, you know, with their platform. And I think there's a statistic that says that About 49% of Latino Americans think that they're registered to vote. I believe it's 69% for African Americans. But to be able to have this type of information that makes you do the due diligence to check to see if you're actually registered, or if not registered, it gives you the right pathway to become registered. I think it's good. And I mean, say what you want to say about the history of this country. Say what you want to say about electoral politics. Say what you want to say if you think, you know, the game is rigged and your vote is meaningless or meaningful, but you still can exercise it. And that's the point. Become educated, politicize yourself. Like, and I love the fact that, you know, even though your vote may, in some arguments, may not mean anything,
right,
but at least you know what's going on. At least you're trying to be educated and get the facts as to what the issues are that are going to affect not just yourself, but again, like I said earlier, your children and your children's children. So yeah, it's good.
I agree. And also, that, you know, just a quick note that the number one search during the debates was, I can't even say it, it was something like registrada para.
Man, I'm out of here. What is that accent? What is going on? This is not cool.
register for voting. voter registration in Spanish.
Thanks, translator.
Registrare para votar.
Clearly, you didn't take foreign language in high
school. I took 3 years in la escuela de secundaria, un año en la universidad. But I'm still
horrible.
Silencio. A lot of restaurant Spanish too. Uno plato. All right. Anyway, so that's interesting. That search was so high. I want to skip over to Google. Back, just continuing on with Google. That you're turning 18. You know, this year, and actually,
man, that's crazy.
Yeah, quietly. I mean, it's not a you know, a landmark birthday. It's not the 20th or the 15th. But you know, there's this article in The Verge sort of like makes the argument that Google is more indispensable than ever. Like, I mean, like they start to talk about how the device that defines our age is really an iPhone that runs on all Google services, which is true. Talk about like Google's popularity is built on a foundation of quality and ubiquity, which is great. Mm-hmm. Like they have a foundation built on, like, you know, that what kind of quality we are, and we are everywhere. You're ubiquitous, and in the world, and no one really argues that. No one really sits there and looks at as Google as the evil Google, or like the new Walmart, or Facebook even. I mean, I don't say no one, but for the most part, people like accept Google as being ubiquitous. Yeah. You know, like the phone company or something, like, you know, it like was. And then, you know, Google's trying shit. Google Fiber, Project Loon, Project Skybender, Smart Glass. I mean, they're trying shit. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? What do you think that Google's place in the world?
I mean, you think in the 18 years of its existence, and where we are within those 18 years, and how Google has been a major player in terms of defining the landscape of technology and how we communicate and how we produce things. I think they have a strong arm. They have the hugest market share, and I think that, you know, if I were being critical, it's like, yeah, and all the things that they offer us for free, all the tools of productivity that we have access to. Keep in mind that they're still mining our information and collecting our information and using that to make gobs of money. And who knows how else they'll use the information. So, I mean, I would caution our allegiance and applaud in that way. But yeah, the usefulness of the tools, I think, are amazing. And just, I mean, from everything from, yeah, like Maps to Gmail to YouTube, like everything. It's like everything that we engage in, Google has left some type of fingerprint on, you know?
Absolutely.
It's like, and I think there was a line in that article where it said sometimes as a brand or a platform or a company, you need to market towards the people, but they're so ubiquitous now is that they're everywhere. The people just bump into them.
Yeah,
you know?
they can just put up.
They don't have to target it, you know?
They don't target it. They just put up on their doodle, you know, register to vote, and you know that guess what's going to happen? 100 million people are going to come to us today, so they will see this right here.
Exactly.
That's pretty strong.
That's, you know,
strong. We don't have to go find the people.
Market anymore.
Yeah, we don't have to find the people. The people just come to Google.
Right.
You know, or if they don't come to Google, they'll come to YouTube. You know,
right. Alphabet.
So it's like, you know, yeah, that is something that's really interesting on that. I want to talk about this laundromat in Charleston, South Carolina, that has a classroom in the back to reach underserved kids. It is. I think this is I don't have mixed feelings about this, but I do have a certain thought about that. But before I get to that, I keep forgetting, I want to talk about our friends at DraftKings, because it is football season. As I mentioned, every single week, I'm an avid football fan and an avid football, fantasy football player. I'm in two leagues. I'm losing in both of them. The only league that I have an opportunity to win in is DraftKings, because DraftKings, I don't have to worry about playing the whole season. I can play it every single week. I can change that every week. I can change strategies every week. I can play against one-on-one. I can play against everyone else. And the cool thing about it is I can win real money with no long season commitments. Usually, you know, when it first started out, there was $1 million prize. There's always $1 million in total prizes every single weekend. But it's fantastic. Here's what you do. You should go to DraftKings.com right now, DraftKings.com. Choose your players for this weekend's contest. Enter the promo code GEEK, as in Geek Nerd Tech. You can play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code GEEK. Play for free. Share in over $1 million in total prizes this weekend only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Promo code GEEK. Eligibility restrictions may apply. Check the website for details.
Yes,
so the laundromat with the classroom in the back.
Yeah.
Look, this is fantastic. I think this is great. I think that, you know, Charleston, South Carolina, I think that it's so many takes on this. I think that as it's at face value, I think this is wonderful. An uncertainty laundromat, if kids, you know, this is a way to sort of help underserved kids.
It's not just a classroom in the back. It's a computer lab. It's a digital lab in the back.
Fair enough. I'm calling it a classroom for lack of better words. And it's also they also offer Bible study.
Yeah.
And they also offer sort of free. This is South Carolina now.
Yeah.
They have Bible study, and they also offer free laundry for the homeless.
Exactly.
And you know, the place itself is very lovely. It's things like Joy, mm-hmm. and it's like the nicest laundromat I've seen in my life.
Right.
And I think it's a great idea, and I wonder if it'll continue
catch on.
It seems to be staffed and run by all white folks in a black community, which is nothing wrong with that, I guess. It just reminds me of it's just interesting to see like a room full of black folks and, you know, and these nice white ladies helping them out. It's just something about that in South Carolina that is, I don't know, it's just interesting to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about Silicon Valley being the hub and the epicenter of technology, but South Carolina actually has a lot of tech companies that, you know, operate there and have originated from there. And I think we talk a lot, again, about social responsibility and narrowing the digital divide and giving people of lower income opportunity to be able to interface with technology and have equal access to internet information that, you know, will propel their imagination and obviously give them more fertilizer for their dreams. And so I love the fact that, you know, while mom or pop or dad or parents are, you know, getting their laundry done, like the kid in the back could be learning and searching and exploring on the internet. I think that's a great environment for all those things to happen. And I think as a case study, like, I would love to see those things happen all over the country, if not even not even just this country, all over the world, like to be able to have the infrastructure to be able to provide that. Even if it's not the newest technology, at least it's technology that, you know, it will propel their imagination and give them kind of like the basic fundamental skills to build upon and take along with them. And man, like so many of our young folks' dreams are so narrow because they don't have necessarily the tools or the opportunities to be able to expand them, and this is a great way to do that.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's fantastic. There's a I'm going to shout out this episode of This American Life that was actually last week's episode called The Problem We All Live With, based on kind of, it's the same title of the old Norman Rockwell photo of the young girl going to school for the first time in, I don't remember the year, but like, but it talks about desegregation of schools in St. Louis, and it's one of the most fascinating listens and heartbreaking listens you'll listen to a long time. I highly, highly recommend it. It's called The Problem We All Live With, and it just reminds me of this in a lot of ways.
Mm.
Also, I'm plugging. I don't know why I'm plugging on this, folks. HBO's new show, Insecure, premieres October 10th. There was a sneak preview of it. It's really funny. I mean, it's kind of overplayed to say call it the black version of Girls, but it is kind of like the black version of Girls. It's really good to see a show with black women in LA that seems very, very real and contemporary and funny. But they do talk a lot about this sort of thing in a real interesting, funny way. So those are two things I want to shout out.
And I just want to shout out our good friends at General Assembly.
Yep.
I think they're doing some amazing things, especially if you're looking for a career in technology, maybe, or business data design, or even marketing. You're just trying to get, you know, that big promotion or that raise. You want to excel in your career, you got to have a 21st century training and skills. And General Assembly is the largest and most respected school worldwide for people seeking to grow their talents and then master the marketplace. And whether it's learning remotely, online, or in person at one of their beautiful campuses, you can join the 350,000 people who have already gotten the training needed to propel their careers in tech and business. In fact, more than 2,500 companies worldwide hire GA graduates. They have their graduates participate in GA career services, and they land a new role in their field of choice within 6 months of starting their job search. And I think that's pretty amazing. So take control of your talent and career now and find out more at ga.co/geek. That's ga.co/geek. And be sure to enter the promo code GEEK to save on your first class, workshop, or event. General Assembly is awesome. Once again, that's GACO/geek, code word geek. General Assembly is the spot, y'all.
Good. Yeah, GA, check it out. Get a job, get training, get it all from our friends, General Assembly. I want to talk about what's happening over at Snapchat. This is something that feels like last few stories all seem sort of inevitable, and I want to talk about them. They're interesting to me. This one in the inevitability, Snapchat is releasing its first hardware product, but it's not a smartphone, it's not a watch. It's spectacles. They're glasses, and you want me to get some? First of all, I don't know what these things look like per se, but I will say that the idea is you wear these things or glasses. They look like whatever. They're going to roll them out slowly, but it's not so much of what I thought they were, which are like virtual reality joints where you watch a Snapchat in real time, which I'm sure will come in version 3 or 4.
Right.
But this is just simply to record your day. You can tap it and record 10 seconds of video and have it play on your phone. Now, look, I don't know what to think about this because you're not, it seems like it's perfect for millennials and others who record everything via Snapchat, and I'm kind of one of those people. But the idea of, like, everything you do, looking around, doing this move.
It's all point of view. So, it's because you want to have a POV of what your eye line is looking at versus your camera line or where you place the camera.
Yeah.
I don't think that's innovative. I don't think that's cool. I don't think that's groundbreaking.
Oh.
I mean, I think maybe...
You don't think it's less distracting than people walking around, like, holding their phones?
And less distracting? But, like, isn't that a part of it? Like, you want to be able to take a selfie and get your group together. Like,
take your glasses off.
And I don't want to be recorded. It's like the Google Glass thing.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you know?
How do I know?
Said it again, Achille.
Exactly. take me to court on something because
right,
I said something.
Exactly.
I'm good on it, man. I mean, those are my takes.
Well,
whatever.
My brain instantly goes to the talk about all the POV porn that's out there.
Not that I would. Let me put on my glasses.
Not that I know about this stuff, but there's a lot of POV porn, so I wonder if this may be an issue for that. I don't know, man.
Hey, man.
I don't know. I guess will how do they look? Will people wear them? What are the price points? Like, it feels like an interesting fun augmentation to what you already have on your phone, but if it's going to cost me an extra $150,
goodbye.
Like, why?
Goodbye.
Why? I don't want to spend, I can't spend that much money to have some glasses I can record stuff in real time. We'll see. And I don't know if technology's any good, blah, 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 blah. We'll see. The next thing that seems inevitable, which is cool, is that Microsoft's talking about solving cancer. And I say solving and not curing because they're like really talking about, treating it like an equation and really get into the biochemistry of what's happening and breaking down and fighting these cells. I think the technology is up to the point now where we feel like that we can, actually use science and computer science to actually solve cancer. What do you think of this?
I think this is awesome. And I think it kind of falls in line with what Mark Zuckerberg is doing with Facebook and saying by, I think, the year 2060 that he's going to donate, over $3 billion, and by the year 2060, he'll have eradicated or find cures for all diseases. So I think this is kind of in alignment with that. Microsoft is doing their due diligence to do that, too. And I agree. I think where we are now, because of, communications and computation, like, and those things converging, like, we're able to capture data in real time that will give us, provide us solutions that we've never been able to have before. And so I think in terms of when you look at the body or the mind and how really the computer was modeled off that, like it, essentially we are computers, we are machines. And so to kind of like figure out how you would eradicate a virus from a computer is the same thing you would, how you would eradicate a disease from the body. And so using those type of using that parallel thinking and just figuring out what we could do computationally to give us more insight and information about what's happening with our organic on an organic cellular level, I think is pretty amazing. And I'm interested to see, you know, what happens in the next decade or two as it relates to, you know, a lot of these diseases that have taken, you know, millions of lives. So I think it's dope. Right.
I think it's incredible too. Also, next is I lost my place here. No surprise here. Also, in the shot non-shocker, looks like Disney and Microsoft are working on putting bids together to buy Twitter.
This is interesting.
It's interesting. Makes sense. I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, Twitter. Yeah. The idea that Twitter. Again, we talked about Twitter. You know, taking the next evolution and becoming and really actually functioning as a media company, mm-hmm. which is where they're going. Like obviously the Monday Night Football, the Thursday Night Football thing, and that we've talked about. And they're also talking about streaming other things.
Yeah.
Being bought by Microsoft or Disney. First of all, who would you prefer them being bought by, and what do you think of this?
Hey, I think this is a major move for. For any company that would want to, you know, put in a bid. And they're saying the valuation for Twitter is close to $20 billion, which I think is pretty amazing.
That's ridiculous.
But because of obviously the user base is, I think, almost 300 million users.
Yeah, that's what you're buying. You're buying the user
exactly.
base.
Exactly. But I think for a company like Disney, like, I think that would be an amazing thing to be able to have in their arsenal with all the other properties that they have under the umbrella.
How would you use it? How would a giant media conglomerate utilize a media communications company like Twitter and those users? Is it just simply, you know, getting, are you buying fans? Are you buying loyalty? Are you buying eyeballs? Are you buying, what are you buying?
I mean, you're buying all of that. You're buying all of that, and you're buying the potentiality to have another touch point to disseminate information, whatever the information may be. If it's the Disney theme park, if it's, you know, Marvel, the next Marvel movie, if it's everything in between, like to be able to have another element to be able to have that communication loop with all those users. Why would Google buy YouTube?
For the search. Google bought YouTube because of the search right. engine, and now they own all of search.
Right.
But I think that let me put it another way. Like if you Keely Shine at a Keely Shine Inc. and you were worth, you know, $900 billion, whatever, and you saw that Twitter was for sale, are you buying it?
Well, if I only had $900 million, I don't think I
would. $900 billion.
Okay. That's a good question. Would I buy it?
If they made you a Keely Shine, the CEO of Disney today. Like, you're at the boardroom. You're like, first things first, give me Twitter.
It's kind of hard to answer that question because I don't know what other opportunities are out there that,
right.
you know, I would have to evaluate. But, I mean, I think for something that most of us use and that pretty much every media outlet uses, everyone has a Twitter handle, like to be able to have that type of power and infrastructure under your banner, I think says a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I mean, I would have to give more thought as to like more specifically what could be leveraged with that, but I think just having that tool, having that digital space can give you more leverage than your competitors.
So moving on, some pop culture stuff, two quick things. Your boy Drake's album. I mean, like the guy who did not go to Tidal, stayed and was riding with Apple Music, and got paid to stay with Apple Music a lot of money.
Yeah,
released his album on Apple Music, and it's the first to hit 1 billion streams on Apple. His new album.
Yeah, got a spins up.
A billion streams. Now, is this the whole album? Is this songs, or is this per individual stream?
I would have to assume that it's an aggregate of everything.
Because it's not like
I mean, because no one's going to listen to the song, every song, the same amount. It's aggregation.
And what is a bill? Like, what is he hanging in his thing? Like, that's platinum is a million. What's a billion? Like, I went platinum. Like, what's a billion?
But I mean, a stream is not a sell.
Exactly.
So, but I mean, I get what you're saying. It's still, that's a billion people that have listened to some part of the album. I mean, not a billion people. However many people have listened a billion times, yeah. Like that's pretty phenomenal, you know?
That's kind of the other question I was having is like, how important is this number? Is this number like, because we're not talking about, I heard Nas was on Bill Simmons' show talking about his still, what's so important to him is the platinum records and the plaques. And he's just of that era and those are still important to him. So, but Drake is obviously a different generation. Yeah. Drake's a millennial. I mean, is it streams? And what does that number mean?
Exactly. Because we talk a lot about streaming, music streaming sites like platforms like Spotify, Tidal, and of course Apple Music, and we've referenced like Pharrell, like his song Happy Guy, like X amount of streams or like millions of streams, and he got paid like a couple grand. Right. Or Aloe Black had a huge smash hit with
Dollar Bill,
like. Made like $500 bucks, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Or the Avicii one. That's the one.
Exactly.
Nobody on Avicii. So Avicii's like in yachts, and Aloe Black's like living in.
So a billion streams. What does that mean? Did you make 50 grand, or did you make 5 million, or like what is the value of that?
Right. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, but I guess it's an impressive number. And it's just an impressive number when you talk about Apple Music's first person to reach this amount of streams. But it's really it's also in perspective. Yeah, you listen to what they're saying. It's not iTunes. It's not sales. It's not anything to do with iTunes.
Right.
It's Apple Music. Apple Music is relatively new. We're talking about under 2 years old, 18 months old.
Yeah.
So the first person to reach a billion streams on Apple Music.
However,
it's impressive.
I will give him his applause because you know Drake is a hip hop artist.
Yes.
It just shows you how powerful you know hip hop culture still is. And I mean, it's not a rock artist. It's not a pop artist. Drake could be argued as a pop artist, but
well, in real time, like right now, what's interesting about that is I looked on Apple Music, you know, just as I often do to see, like, you know, what's happening?
Top results.
What are the kids listening to these days? And if you look, you know, if you look in the, browse what's new, the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things are all hip hop, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's just dope. So I don't know. I guess it's interesting, but I don't know a time where that's been like that before. But like, really, talk about the dominant music and the dominant culture.
Let me throw you this question. Yeah. I know we're running out of time, but
right.
So yeah, we talked about Apple developing an ancillary content, you know, for Apple Music video content.
Video content. Yes.
So what do you think? I don't know if you're up to speed with this. What do you think about Spotify getting into the video content game? Because that's their next move. They're spending a gobs of money to develop video content at Spotify.
Well, I will.
How inventive do you think that will be for that platform? And how do you think that will shift the game?
It's hard to say, but I think it's a great idea. I think that, you know, Spotify, because, you know, you have, it's all about the user base. Spotify has collected a gigantic user base. As Apple Music is starting to collect a gigantic user base. So if you have these people that are already using your service on a regular basis, and to say to them, oh yeah, now we're going to do video, you have to think about how you change the user's habits from listening to watching, change it from passive to active, which is the main thing, right? Why podcasts and Spotify don't seem so great because it's passive. You know, you can do it while you're washing clothes, driving. At video, you got to stop down and do that. So whether it'll work or not, you see, but I think it's definitely a great move. And you're seeing this with Pandora. Pandora is now shifting into exclusive shows. Questlove has a show on Pandora. Mm-hmm. They're having shows on Pandora now. They're having video on Pandora soon. Mm-hmm. So I think this is where it's at. I could say that we maybe in some talks to do a show with Pandora, hopefully. So not Pandora, with Spotify. So I hope they do it. I hope they're great, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I definitely think, you know, that is going to be the soon to be landscape with all these, you know, streaming platforms that they're going to be able to. I mean, we talk about it all the time about, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and all the big guys becoming, you know, more of like a media outlet. And I think, you know, these smaller, newer fish are going to do the same thing. I mean, they're already kind of doing it, but hasn't been formalized, hasn't been like programmed. And so I think that's going to be the new phase. Even with like Netflix, when Netflix start doing podcasts, like game changer. You know what I'm saying? Like I think all these guys are going to be able to be offering their slate of what they're offering is going to be diverse. It's not just going to be in one type of thing. It's going to be multiple things.
Yeah, so. It's the realization of like these guys going from one service to being, you know, to making that move towards being media companies.
Exactly.
Like Twitter, like this. So we'll see. Last but not least, We have our boy Luke Cage is dropping.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yes. So I saw the Wu-Tang trailer. I haven't seen the new trailer. I mean, it's a new trailer with some more.
It's very good.
Okay, so I was already in. I was in, you know, when I saw him on Jessica Jones. I've been in.
But he's not going to be the same as he was in Jessica Jones.
What do you mean?
I mean, well, it's a shift in his how he's presented. Like he's not
like a bartending dude sleeping with white girls.
In Jessica Jones, he's not really hip hop out.
No.
In this one, he is. Okay. I mean, even the episodes. I don't know if you knew this, but the episodes are named off of Gangstar songs.
Of a Gangstar song?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Each episode is a Gangstar song.
A Gangstar song?
That's correct.
That's impressive. Impressive.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive. I like that.
And I think, what's my man from Tribe, DJ producer?
Shahid Muhammad.
Yeah, he's scoring. There's two people scoring. He's one of the guys that's scoring a lot of the music. And essentially, they're making his character like more like early 90s hip hop. Like that's the energy, that's the vibe, like that they're bringing into Luke Cage. Like,
smart.
I think it's very smart.
Very smart, right? Because a lot of Gen Xers like me love the early 90s hip hop and stuff from that. And then a lot of so many white college kids came of age on 90s hip hop. So many white Gen Xers and Generation Y kids. From, you know, people my age, like Robert Downey Jr. to Jonah Hill, who still talk about that stuff. So it's a whole world of people that came of age of in 90s hip hop. So it's very smart.
Super smart.
Very smart.
It drops tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the 30th.
Well, Friday.
Gangstar. That's like a deep cut in pop culture.
I think that's dope.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, Gangstar is obviously defunct because, you know, Guru, rest in peace, is not with us anymore.
But Premier is.
That's dope. And they've got tracks. Yeah. I hope they don't, you know, that takes them to at least 10 seasons of tracks. So, well, good. Well, you just school me on that. Well, I'm very excited about Luke Cage and very excited to see how it comes out. I think that's it for us. Anything else?
Nah, man, I think it's good. Like, we'll have some new fresh stuff next week.
Yep, we will. And that's like I say, we're moving to Wednesdays as well. So any of the guys who are checking for us on Friday will be on Wednesdays from now on. So you can check our feed earlier for some midweek stuff. Help us catch some things from the previous week and also look to the week ahead. So, but we will see you soon. And I think that's it. Where can the people find you?
Man, they can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can I find you?
On Snapchat with my snap glasses on at JK Braz, and on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K Braswell. Thank you very much. Thanks, Marissa, and we'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.